flick of her fingers as they passed into a cavern whose walls were covered with crystalline formations that looked like icicles. A huge mass of crystals hung from the center of the ceiling like a chandelier, glowing faintly. "This isn't the way we came," Aaron complained, but Warren didn't pause except to take a bite out of one of the dangling crystals as he went by it. He bypassed all the obvious exits and headed straight for a small, dark hole which turned out to be an almost lightless tunnel. They had to get on their knees and crawl, the globe of water wobbling precariously between them. Sweat was running down Call's back from the cramped position. His leg was killing him, and he'd begun to worry that Warren was leading them in the totally wrong direction. "Warren?" he started. He broke off as the passageway suddenly widened out into a vast chamber. He staggered slowly to his feet, his bad leg punishing him for pushing it so hard. Tamara and Aaron followed, looking pale with the effort of both crawling and holding the water steady at the same time. Warren scuttled toward an archway leading out. Call followed as fast as his leg would allow. He was so distracted by the effort that he didn't notice when the air became warmer, filling with the smell of something burning. It wasn't until Aaron exclaimed, "We've been here before. I recognize the water," that he looked up and saw that they were back in the room with the smoking orange stream and the huge vines that hung down like tendrils. Tamara exhaled with clear relief. "This is great. Now we just—" She broke off with a cry as a creature rose out of the smoking stream, making her stumble back and Aaron yell out loud. The ball of water that had hung between them crashed to the floor. The water sizzled, as if it had been dumped onto a hot skillet. "Yes," said Warren, "just like I was bid. He told me to bring you back, and now you are here."
"He told you," Tamara echoed.
Call stared open-mouthed at the huge being rising out of the stream, which had started to boil, huge red and orange bubbles appearing on the surface with the ferocity of lava. The creature was clumped and dark and stony, as if it were made out of shards of jagged rock. But it had a human face, a man's face, the planes seemingly cut from granite. Its eyes were just holes into darkness.
"Greetings, Iron Mages,"
it said, voice echoing, as though the thing spoke from some great distance.
"You are far from your master."
The apprentices were speechless. Call could hear Tamara's breath rasping in the quiet.
"Have you nothing to say to me?"
The creature's granite mouth moved. It was like watching stone fissure and split apart.
"I was once like you, children."
Tamara made a horrible sound, half sob and half gasp.
"No," she said. "You can't be one of us. You can't still speak. You—"
"What is it?" Call hissed. "What is it, Tamara?"
"You're one of the devoured,"
Tamara said, her voice breaking.
"Consumed by an element, not human anymore."
"Fire," the thing breathed. "I became fire long ago. I gave myself to it, and it to me. It burned away what was human and weak."
"You're immortal," Aaron said, his eyes looking very big and green in his pale, grimy face.
"I am so much more than that. I am eternal."
The devoured leaned close to Aaron, close enough that Aaron's skin began to flush, the way skin pinkens when someone stands close to a fire.
"Aaron, don't," Tamara said, taking a step forward. "It's trying to burn you, absorb you. Get away from it."
Her face shone in the flickering light, and Cole realized there were tears on her cheeks. He thought suddenly of her sister, consumed by elements.
"Doomed. Absorb you?"
The devoured laughed.
"Look at you. Little flickering sparks, barely grown, not much life to be squeezed out of you."
"You must want something from us," Cole said, hoping the devoured would swing its attention away from Aaron, "or you wouldn't have bothered to show yourself."
The thing turned to him.
"Master Rufus's surprise apprentice. Even the rocks have whispered of you. The greatest of the masters has chosen strangely this year."
Cole couldn't believe it. Even the devoured knew about his crappy entrance scores.
"I see through the masks of skin you wear," the devoured continued. "I see your future. One of you will fail. One of you will die. And one of you is already dead."
"What?" Aaron's voice rose. "What does that mean? Already dead?
Don't listen to it," Tamara cried. "It's a thing, not human."
"Who would desire to be human?
Human hearts break. Human bones shatter. Human skin can tear."
The devoured, already close to Aaron, reached to touch his face. Cole leaped forward as fast as his leg would let him, knocking into Aaron, sending them both tumbling against one of the walls. Tamara whirled to face the devoured, her hand raised. A swirling mass of air bloomed in her palm.
"Enough!"
roared a voice from the archway. Master Rufus stood there, forbidding and terrible, power seeming to pour off of him. The thing took a step back, flinching.
"I mean no harm."
"Begone," said Master Rufus. "Leave my apprentices be, or I will dispel you as I would any elemental, no matter who you once were, Marcus."
"Don't call me by a name that is no longer mine," the devoured said.
Its gaze fell on Cole, Aaron, and Tamara as it subsided back to the sulphurous pool.
"You three, I will see again."
It disappeared in a ripple. But Cole knew it still remained beneath the surface, somewhere. Master Rufus looked momentarily shaken.
"Come along,"
he said, ushering his apprentices through a low archway. Cole looked back for Warren, but the elemental was gone. Cole was briefly disappointed. He wanted to scream at Warren for betraying them, and also to disinvite him from his bedroom forever. But if Master Rufus saw Warren, it would be obvious that Cole was the one who'd stolen him from Rufus's office. So maybe it was good he was gone. They walked for a while in silence.
"How did you know to come find us?" Tamara asked finally. "That something bad was happening."
"You don't think I'd let you wander the depths of the Magisterium unwatched? Do you?"
said Rufus.
"I sent an air elemental to follow you. It reported back to me once you had been drawn into the cavern of the devoured."
"Marcus, the devoured, told us some..."
"He told us our futures," Aaron said.
"What did that mean? Was the devoured really once an apprentice like us?"
Rufus looked uncomfortable for the first time Cole could remember.
"It was amazing.
he had finally acquired an expression.
Whatever he said means nothing. He's gone completely mad, and yes, I suppose he was an apprentice like you, once. But he became one of the devoured long, long after that. He was a master by then. My master, in fact.
They were silent, all the way back to the refectory. At dinner that night, Call, Aaron, and Tamara tried to act like their day had been normal. They sat at the long table with the other apprentices, but didn't say much. Rufus was off with Master Milagros and Master Rockmaple, sharing a lichen pizza and looking somber.
"Looks like your orienteering lesson didn't go so well," smirked Jasper, his dark eyes flicking from Tamara to Aaron to Cole.
Admittedly, they all looked exhausted and dirty, their faces smudged. Tamara had hollows under her eyes, as if she'd had a nightmare.
"Get lost in the tunnels?"
"We ran into one of the devoured," Aaron said, "down in the deep caves."
The table burst into chatter.
"One of the devoured?" Kai demanded. "Are they, like people say, hideous monsters? Did it try to absorb you?"
Celia's eyes were round. "How did you get away?" Cole saw that Tamara's hands were shaking as she held her cutlery. He said abruptly,
"Actually, it told us our futures."
"What do you mean?"
asked Rafe.
"It said that one of us would fail, one of us would die,
and one of us was already dead," said Cole.
"Think we know who's going to fail," Jasper said, eyeing Cole.
Cole suddenly remembered he hadn't told anyone about Jasper being in the library, and began to reconsider that decision.
"Thanks, Jasper," said Aaron, "always contributing."
"You shouldn't let it bother you," Drew said earnestly. "That's just babble. It doesn't mean anything. None of you are going to die, and you're obviously not dead, for Pete's sake."
Cole saluted Drew with his fork.
"Thanks."
Tamara put her cutlery down.
"Excuse me," she said,
and slipped out of the room. Aaron and Cole immediately stood up to follow her. They were halfway down the corridor outside the refectory when Cole heard someone call his name, Drew, hurrying along after them.
"Cole," he said. "Can I talk to you for a second?"
Cole exchanged a look with Aaron.
"You go ahead," Aaron said. "I'll go check on Tamara. Meet you back at the room."
Cole turned back to Drew, pushing his tangled and cave-dusty hair out of his eyes.
"Is everything okay?
Are you sure that was a good idea?"
Drew's blue eyes were wide.
"What?"
Cole was totally confused.
"Telling everyone about that. About the devoured. About the prophecy."
"You said it was just babble," Cole protested. "You said it didn't mean anything."
"I just said that because—"
Drew searched Cole's face, his own expression turning from confusion to concern to dawning horror.
"You don't know,"
he said finally.
"How can you not know?"
"Not know what?" Cole demanded. "You're freaking me out, Drew."
"Who are you?"
Drew said, half in a whisper, and then backed up a step.
"I was wrong about everything," he said. "I have to go."
He turned around and ran. Cole watched him go, totally bewildered. He resolved to ask Tamara and Aaron about it, but by the time he got back to the room, exhaustion had clearly overtaken them. Tamara's door was shut, and Aaron was asleep on one of the couches.
Chapter 15
Cole woke up to the sound of someone moving outside his door. His first thought was that it was Tamara or Aaron working late in the common room. But the footsteps were too heavy to belong to either of his friends, and the raised voices that followed were definitely adult. He couldn't help hearing Alistair's voice in his head. They don't have any mercy. Not even for children. Cole lay sleeplessly staring upward until one of the crystals set in the walls sputtered into brightness. He took Miri out of her drawer and slid from the bed, wincing as his shoeless feet hit the cold stone floor. Without the heavy blankets, he could feel the chill air through his thin pajamas. He hoisted Miri just as the door opened. Three masters stood in the doorway, looking in at him. They were dressed in their black uniforms, and their faces were grave and serious. Master Lemuel's gaze flicked from Cole's face to the blade. "Rufus, your apprentice is well trained." Cole didn't know what to say to that.
"You won't need any weapons tonight, though," said Master Rufus. "Leave Semiramis on your bed, and come with us."
Looking down at his Lego pajamas, Cole scowled. "I'm not dressed."
"Well trained in preparedness," said Master North. "Less well trained in obedience."
He snapped his fingers. "Put the knife down."
"North," said Master Rufus, "leave the discipline of my apprentices to me."
He moved closer to Cole, who didn't quite know what to do. Between Drew's bizarre behavior, his father's warnings, and the Devoured's creepy prophecy, he was feeling deeply unsettled. He didn't want to give up his knife. Rufus's hand closed around Cole's wrist, and Cole let Miri go. He didn't know what else he could do. Cole knew Master Rufus. He'd eaten meals with him for months and been taught lessons by him. Rufus was a person. Rufus had saved him from the Devoured. "He wouldn't hurt me," Cole told himself. "He wouldn't. No matter what my father said." An odd expression flickered across Rufus's face and was gone immediately.
"Come along," he said.
Cole followed the masters into the common room, where Tamara and Aaron were already waiting. Both of them were in their pajamas. Aaron was wearing a t-shirt that was practically transparent with washing and sweatpants with a hole in the knee. His blonde hair stuck up like duck fluff, and he looked barely awake. Tamara looked tense. Her hair was carefully braided, and she wore pink pajamas that said, "I fight like a girl," across the front. Under the words was a screen print of cartoon girls executing deadly ninja moves.
"What's going on?"
Cole mouthed to them silently. Aaron shrugged, and Tamara shook her head. Clearly, they didn't know any more than he did, although Tamara seemed to know enough to look like she was going to jump out of her skin.
"Seat yourselves," said Master Lemuel. "Please don't dawdle."
"You can clearly see that none of them were trying to," said Master Rufus in a low voice that faded out at the end as though he didn't want to speak the rest out loud.
"This is very important," Master North said as Cole, Aaron, and Tamara sat down together on one couch.
Tamara yawned hugely and forgot to cover her mouth, which meant she was really tired.
"Have you seen Drew Wallace? Several people told us that he followed you out of the refectory, and he seemed upset. Did he say anything to you? Discuss his plans?"
Cole frowned. The last time he saw Drew was way too weird to talk about. "What plans?"
"We talked about our lessons," Aaron volunteered. "Drew followed us into the hall. He wanted to talk to Cole."
"About the Devoured. I think he was really scared.
Call didn't know what else to say. He had no other explanation for Drew's behavior.
Thank you, said Master North. Now, we need you to go back to your rooms and put on your uniforms. We're going to need your help.
Drew left the Magisterium sometime after 10 tonight, and it was only due to another apprentice getting up for a midnight glass of water and finding his note that we discovered he was gone at all.
What did the note say? Tamara asked.
Master Lemuel glowered at her, and Master North looked surprised to be interrupted. Clearly, neither of them knew Tamara very well.
That he was running away from the Magisterium,
Master Lemuel said quietly.
You know how dangerous it is for half-trained mages to be loose in the world? And that's to say nothing of the chaos-ridden animals that make their homes in the neighboring woods.
We have to find him, Master Rufus said, nodding slowly. The whole school will help search. We can cover more ground that way. I hope that explanation is sufficient, Tamara, because time really is of the essence.
Flushing, Tamara rose and headed toward her room, and Aaron and Call went to theirs. Call slowly drew on his winter clothes, his gray uniform, a thick sweater, a zip-up hoodie. The adrenaline of being woken by the mages was burning off, and he was starting to realize how little sleep he'd had. But the idea of Drew stumbling through the dark made him blink himself awake. What had made Drew run? Reaching for his wristband, Call's fingers trailed over Alistair's cuff and the mysterious note to Master Rufus. He remembered his father's words,
Call, you must listen to me. You don't know what you are. You must get away as soon as you can.
He was supposed to be the one running, not Drew. After a knock, the door to his room opened and Tamara came in. She wore her uniform and her hair was pulled into two braids pinned tightly around her head. She looked a lot more awake than he felt.
Call, she said. Come on, we've got to... What's that?
What's what? He glanced down and realized he still had the drawer pulled open, Alistair's wristband and letter on full display. He fished the wristband out and leaned back, pushing the drawer closed with his weight.
This is my father's wristband, from when he was at the Magisterium. Can I see?
Tamara didn't wait for an answer, just reached out and plucked it from his hand.
Her dark eyes widened as she looked at it. He must have been a really good student.
What makes you say that?
Those stones, and this...
She broke off, blinking.
This can't be your father's wristband.
Well, I guess it could be my mother's.
No,
Tamara said.
We saw their handprints in the Hall of Graduates. They both graduated, Call. Whoever's wristband this is, it ends at Silver Year. There's no gold.
She handed it back to him.
This bracelet belonged to someone who never graduated from the Magisterium. But...
Call broke off as Aaron came in, his wavy hair pasted down to his forehead. He looked like he'd splashed water on his face to wake up.
Come on, guys, he said. Master Lemuel and Master North went on ahead, but Rufus seems about to break the door down.
Call shoved the wristband into his pocket, remaining conscious of Tamara's curious gaze on him as they followed Master Rufus through the tunnels. Call's leg was stiff, the way it was most mornings, so it was slow going for him. Aaron and Tamara were careful to match their speed to his, though. For once, he wasn't mad about it. On the way out, they ran into the rest of the apprentices being led by their masters, including Lemuel and North. The kids looked as confused and worried as Master Rufus's apprentices did. A few more turns, and they came to a door. Master Lemuel opened it, and they stepped into another cave, this one with an opening at the end that wind blew through. They were going outside, and not the way they'd come in that first day. This cave was open at the far end. In the stone was set a pair of giant metal gates. They had clearly been forged by a master of metal. They were wrought iron, tapering to sharp points at the top that almost brushed the cave ceiling. Across the gates, the metal bent into words. Knowledge and action are one and the same. It was the mission gate. Cole remembered the boy strapped to the stretcher of branches, his skin half burned off, and realized that in the confusion, he'd never noticed much about the gate itself.
Cole, Tamara, Aaron,
Master Rufus said. Beside him was tall, curly-haired Alex, looking uncharacteristically somber. He wore his uniform and a thick, cloak-like coat over it. There were gloves on his hands.
Alexander will be leading you. Do not leave his side. The rest of us will be within shouting distance. We want you to cover an area near one of the Magisterium's less used exits. Look for any trace of Drew. And if you see him, call out for him. We think it more likely that he will trust one of his own iron years than a master, or even an older student like Alex.
Cole wondered why the masters thought Drew would be more likely to trust another student over them. He wondered if they knew more about why Drew had run away than they were letting on. Then what do we do? Aaron asked.
Once you've spotted him, Alex will signal the masters. Just keep him talking until we arrive. You and Master Milagros's apprentices will go east.
He waved across the crowded grounds, and Master Milagros started toward him, trailed by Celia, Jasper, and Gwenda.
The Bronze Years will head west, the Copper Years will go north, and the Silver and Gold Years who are not assisting masters will go south and north.
What about the chaos-ridden animals in the woods? Gwenda asked. Aren't they dangerous to us, too? Master Milagros looked toward Alex and another older student. You won't be alone out there. Stick together and signal us immediately if there's a problem. We will keep close by.
Already, some of the apprentice groups were moving out into the night, summoning glowing orbs that flew through the air like disembodied lanterns. A low hum of whispers and mutterings accompanied them as they made their way into the dark woods. Cole and the others followed Alex. When the last apprentice passed through the gate, it shut with a disturbingly final clang behind them.
That's the sound it always makes, Alex said, looking at Cole's expression. Come on. We're going this way.
He headed toward the woods, along a dark path. Cole stumbled over a root. Aaron, always looking for an excuse, summoned his sparking blue ball of energy, looking pleased that it would be useful. He grinned as it spun above his fingers, lighting the air around them.
Drew!
Gwenda called. Echoes of other Iron Year students could be heard in the distance.
Drew!
Jasper rubbed his eyes. He was wearing what appeared to be a fur-lined coat and a hat with ear flaps that was slightly too big for his head.
Why do we have to be put in danger just because some dweeb decided he couldn't handle it anymore?
He demanded.
I don't understand why he'd leave in the middle of the night, Celia said, her arms around herself, shivering even in her long, bright blue parka. None of this makes any sense. We don't know any more than you do, said Tamara,
But if Drew ran away, he must have had a reason.
He's a coward, said Jasper. That's the only possible reason for leaving.
The forest floor was covered in a thin dusting of snow, and the trees hung low all around them. Aaron's blue light illuminating just enough to emphasize the eeriness of the sharp branches.
What do you think he has to be afraid of? Cole asked.
Jasper didn't answer.
We've got to stay together, Alex told them, conjuring three golden balls of flame that whirled around them, charting the outer edge of their party. If you see or hear anything, tell me. Don't run off.
Frozen leaves crunched under Tamara's feet as she dropped back to walk with Cole.
So, she said softly, how come you thought that wristband belonged to your father?
Cole looked at the others, trying to decide if he was outside the range of their hearing.
Because it came from him.
He sent it to you?
Cole shook his head.
Not exactly. I found it.
Found it? Tamara sounded highly suspicious.
I know you think he's crazy. He threw a knife at you.
He threw it to me, said Cole. And then he sent this wristband to the Magisterium.
I think he's trying to tell them, to warn them about something.
Like what?
Something about me, Cole said.
You mean you're in danger?
Tamara sounded alarmed, but Cole didn't reply.
He didn't know how to tell her more without telling her everything. What if there really was something wrong with him? If Tamara found out, would she keep his secret? No matter how bad it was? He wanted to trust her. She'd already told him more about the wristband than he'd figured out in months of staring at it.
What are you guys talking about?
Aaron asked, falling back to join them. Tamara immediately clammed up, her eyes darting between Aaron and Cole. Cole could tell that she wasn't going to tell Aaron anything unless he said it was okay. It sparked a strangely warm feeling in his stomach. He'd never really had friends who'd kept his secrets before. It was enough to decide him.
We're talking about this, he said,
pulling the wristband out of his pocket and handing it over to Aaron, who examined it while Cole explained the whole story. His conversation with his father, the warning that Cole didn't know what he was, the letter Alistair had sent Rufus, the message with the wristband.
Bind his magic.
Bind your magic?
Aaron's voice rose. Tamara shushed him.
Aaron returned his voice to a harsh whisper. Why would he ask Rufus to do that? That's crazy.
I don't know,
Cole whispered back, looking up ahead anxiously. Alex and the other kids didn't seem to be paying any attention to them as they made their way up a low rise of hill, snaked through with big tree roots, calling Drew's name.
I don't understand any of it.
Well, clearly the wristband was supposed to be a message to Rufus, Tamara said.
It means something. I just don't know what. Maybe if we knew whose it was, said Aaron.
He handed the wristband to Cole, who tied it onto his arm above his own wristband and under his sleeve.
Someone who didn't graduate. Someone who left the Magisterium when he or she was 16 or 17. Or someone who died here.
Tamara looked at it again, frowning at the small medals with symbols on them.
I don't know exactly what these mean. Excellence in something, but what? If we knew, that would tell us something. And I don't know what this black stone means either. I've never seen one before.
Let's ask Alex, Aaron said.
No way,
said Cole, shaking his head and looking warily at the others trooping through the snow in the dark.
What if there is something wrong with me, and he can figure it out just from looking at this wristband?
There's nothing wrong with you,
Aaron said sturdily. but Aaron was the kind of person who had faith in people and believed stuff like that.
"Alex," Tamara said loudly, "Alex, can we ask you something?"
"Tamara, no," Call hissed.
But the other student had already fallen back to walk alongside them.
"What's up?"
he asked, blue eyes inquisitive.
"You guys all right?"
"I was just wondering if we could see your wristband," Tamara said, with a quelling look in Call's direction.
Call relented.
"Huh. Sure,"
Alex agreed, unsnapping the band and handing it over. It had three stripes of metal on it, ending with bronze. It was also studded with gems, red and orange, blue and indigo, and scarlet.
"What are these for?" Tamara asked innocently, though Call had a feeling she probably knew the answer.
"The completion of different tasks."
Alex sounded matter-of-fact, not like he was bragging. "This one is for using fire successfully to dispel an elemental. This one is for using air to create an illusion."
"What would it mean if you had a black one?"
Aaron asked. Alex's eyes widened. He opened his mouth to answer at the same moment Jasper yelled,
"Look!"
A bright light glowed out from the ridge of the hill opposite theirs. As they stared, a scream split the night, high and terrible.
"Stay here," Alex barked, and started to run, half slipping down the side of the hill they were on, heading toward the light.
Suddenly, the night was full of noise. Call could hear other groups shouting and calling to one another. Something slid through the sky above them, something scaly and snake-like. But Alex wasn't looking up.
"Alex!"
Tamara yelled, but the older boy didn't hear her. He had reached the other hill and was starting to scramble up it. The scaly shadow was over his head, swooping and dipping. The kids were all shouting for Alex now, trying to warn him. All of them except for Cole. He started to run, ignoring the twisting burn in his leg as he slid and nearly fell down the hillside. He heard Tamara scream his name and Jasper yell,
"We're supposed to stay here!"
But Call didn't slow. He was going to be the apprentice that Aaron thought he was, the one who there was nothing wrong with. He was going to do the kind of things that got you mysterious heroic achievements on your wristband. He was going to throw himself right into the fray. He tripped over a loose stone, fell, and rolled to the bottom of the hill, banging his elbow hard on a tree root.
"Okay," he thought.
"Not the best start." Staggering to his feet, he started to climb again. He could see things more clearly now in the light that poured down from the hilltop. It was a clear, knife-like light that threw every pebble and hole into sharp relief. The rise grew steeper as Call reached the top. He fell to his knees and clambered the last few feet, rolling onto the flat surface of the hilltop. Something brushed past him then. Something huge. Something that brought a rush of air that sprayed dirt into his eyes. He choked and staggered to his feet.
"Help!"
He heard a weak voice call, "Please, help me!" Call looked around. The bright light was gone. There was only starlight and moonlight to illuminate the hilltop. It was covered with a tangle of roots and bushes.
"Who's there?"
he said. He heard what sounded like a hiccuping sob.
"Call?"
Call started to blunder toward the voice, pushing through the undergrowth. From behind him, people were shouting his name. He kicked aside some rocks and half-slid down a small incline. He found himself inside a shadowy depression in the ground, lined with thorny bushes. A huddled figure lay at the opposite side.
"Drew?"
Call called out. The slight boy struggled to turn around.
Call could see that one of his feet was jammed in what looked like a gopher hole. It was twisted at an ugly, painful-looking angle. From behind him, two softly glowing orbs lit up the night. Call glanced back and realized they were floating over from the hill where the other students were standing. He could barely see the others from where he was, and he wasn't sure they could see him at all.
Call?
The tears shining on Drew's face were bright in the moonlight. Call scooted closer.
Are you stuck?
He asked.
Of course,
Drew whispered.
I tried to run away, and this is as far as I get. It's humiliating.
His teeth were chattering. He was wearing only a thin t-shirt and jeans. Call couldn't believe he'd planned to run away from the magisterium dressed like that.
Help me, Drew said through chattering teeth. Help me get free. I have to keep running.
But I don't get it. What's wrong? Where are you going to go?
I don't know.
Drew's face twisted.
You have no idea what Master Lemuel's like. He figured out that sometimes when I'm under a lot of stress, I do better, like a lot better. I know it's weird, but it's always been the way I am. I do better on a testing day than I ever do in normal practice. So he figured out that he could make me better by keeping me under stress all the time. I barely ever sleep. He only lets me eat sometimes, and I never know when that's going to be. He keeps scaring me, calling up illusions of monsters and elementals while I'm alone in the dark, and I want to get better. I want to be a better mage, but I just...
He looked away and swallowed, his throat bobbing up and down.
I can't.
Call looked at him more closely. It was true that Drew didn't look like the boy Call had met on the bus to the magisterium. He was thinner. A lot thinner. You could see how his jeans hung loose, secured by a belt that was pulled all the way through to the last hole. His nails were bitten down, and there were dark shadows under his eyes.
Okay,
Call said. But you're not going to be able to run anywhere on this. He leaned forward and put his hand on Drew's ankle. It felt hot to the touch. Drew yelped,
That hurts!
Call eyed the ankle where it poked out below the hem of Drew's jeans. It looked swollen and dark.
I think you might have broken a bone. You do?
Drew sounded panicked. Call reached down inside himself, through himself, into the ground he was kneeling on.
Earth wants to bind.
He felt it give way under his touch, making a space where magic could spill in. The way water rose to fill up a hole scraped in the sand of a beach. Call drew the magic through himself into his hand, letting it flow into Drew. Drew gave a gasp. Call pulled away. Sorry.
No.
Drew looked at him wonderingly.
It's hurting less. It's working.
Call had never done magic like that before. Healing had been something Master Rufus talked about, but they'd never practiced.
But he'd managed it.
Maybe there really was nothing wrong with him.
Drew! Call!
It was Alex, followed by a shining globe of light that lit the ends of his hair like a halo. He skidded down the slope of the incline, nearly knocking into them. His face was pale in the moonlight. Call moved away.
Drew stuck. I think his ankle's broken.
Alex bent over the younger boy and touched the earth that was trapping his leg in place. Call felt stupid for not having thought of the same thing as the ground crumbled away, and Alex locked his arms under Drew's shoulders, pulling him free. Drew yelled aloud in pain.
Didn't you hear me?
His ankle's broken.
Call started.
Call, there's no time.
Alex knelt down to lift Drew in his arms.
We have to get out of here.
What?
Drew seemed almost too stunned to function.
What's going on?
Alex was scanning the area, anxiously. Call suddenly remembered all the warnings about what lurked in the woods outside the caverns of the school.
The chaos-ridden, Call said.
They are here.
Chapter 16. A low howl cut through the night. Alex started up the incline, gesturing impatiently for Call to follow. Call scrambled after him, his leg aching. When they reached the top, Call saw Aaron and Tamara coming over the crest of the hill, Celia, Jasper, and Rafe right behind. They were panting, alert.
Drew!
Tamara gasped, staring at the limp figure in Alex's arms.
Chaos-ridden animals!
Aaron said, coming to a stop in front of Call and Alex.
They're coming up over the far side of the hill.
What kind?
Alex asked urgently.
Wolves,
said Jasper, pointing. Still holding Drew in his arms, Alex turned and stared in horror. Moonlight showed dark shapes slipping from the woods, advancing toward them. Five wolves, long and lean, with fur the color of a stormy sky. Their snouts scented the air, their coruscating eyes wild and strange. Alex bent down and laid Drew carefully on the ground.
Listen to me,
he shouted to the other students who were milling fearfully.
Make a circle around us while I heal Drew. They have a sense for the weak, the wounded. They'll attack.
We only have to hold off the chaos-ridden until the masters get here,
Tamara said, charging in front of Alex.
Right, hold them off. That's simple.
Jasper spat out, but he fell into formation with the others, making a circle of their bodies with their backs to Alex and Drew. Call found himself standing shoulder to shoulder with Celia and Jasper. Celia's teeth were chattering. The chaos-ridden wolves appeared, low and feral, spilling up over the ridge like shadows. They were huge, much bigger than any wolves Call had ever imagined. Ropes of drool hung from their open jaws. Their eyes burned and spun, sparking that feeling inside Call's head again, the itchy, burning, thirsty one.
Chaos, he thought to himself. Chaos wants to devour.
As terrifying as they were, though, the more Call looked at them, the more he thought their eyes were beautiful. Like the inside of a kaleidoscope, a thousand different colors all at once. He couldn't tear his gaze away.
Call!
Tamara's voice cut through his thoughts. Call jolted back into his body, realizing suddenly that he had stepped out of the formation and was several feet ahead of the rest of the group. He hadn't moved away from the wolves. He'd moved toward them. A hand grabbed at his wrist, Tamara looking terrified but determined.
Would you stop?
She demanded, and started trying to drag him back toward the others. Everything after that happened very fast. Tamara tugged Call back. Call resisted. His weak leg went out from under him and he fell, his elbows jamming painfully into the stony ground. Tamara drew her hand back and made a gesture like she was throwing a baseball. A circle of fire shot from her palm toward a wolf that was suddenly very close. The fire exploded along its fur, and the wolf howled, bearing a mouth full of sharp teeth. But it kept coming. In fact, its fur was now standing on end as if it had been electrified. Its red tongue lolled from its mouth as it stalked closer and closer. It was only feet away from Call, and he struggled to get his legs under him, Tamara reaching down to slide her hands under his arms, trying to haul him up. The chaos-ridden couldn't be chased off like a wyvern. They didn't care about anything but teeth and blood and madness.
Tamara, Call, get back here!
Aaron shouted. He sounded scared. The chaos-ridden wolves were stalking closer, surrounding Call and Tamara, the knot of apprentices forgotten. Alex was in their midst, holding the unconscious Drew. Alex looked frozen, his eyes and mouth wide. Call staggered to his feet, shoving Tamara behind him. He locked his gaze with the wolf closest to him, the wolf's eyes still spun red and gold, the color of fire.
This is it, Call thought.
His mind seemed to have slowed down. He felt like he was moving underwater.
My father was right. All along he was right.
We're going to die here. He wasn't angry, but he wasn't scared either. Tamara was struggling, trying to pull him backward, but he couldn't move, wouldn't move. The oddest feeling was pulsing through him, like a gathering knot under his ribs. He could feel the strange wristband on his arm throb.
Tamara, he breathed. Go back.
No.
She yanked at the back of his shirt.
Call stumbled, and the wolf sprang.
Someone, maybe Celia, maybe Jasper, screamed. The wolf leaped through the air, terrible and beautiful, its coat shedding sparks. Call began to raise his hands. A shadow passed across Call's vision, someone skidding to a stop between him and the wolf, someone with light hair. Someone who planted his feet and thrust out both his arms as if he could hold the wolf back with his hands.
Alex,
Call thought at first, dizzily, and then, with a cold sense of shock.
Aaron!
No, he called, jerking forward, but Tamara would not let him go. Aaron, no! The other apprentices were shouting, too, calling to Aaron. Alex had left Drew's side and was pushing his way toward them. Aaron didn't move. His feet were planted so firmly in the ground, it was as if they had taken root there. His hands were up, palms out, and from the centers of his palms spilled something like smoke. It was blacker than black, dense and sinuous. And Call knew, without knowing how, that it was the darkest substance in the world. With a howl, the wolf contorted its body, twisting aside so that it landed awkwardly on the ground, only feet from Tamara and Call. Its fur stood up all over, its eyes pinwheeling madly. The other wolves howled and whimpered, adding their voices to the madness of the night.
Aaron, what are you doing?
Tamara said so quietly that Call wasn't sure Aaron heard her.
Are you doing that?
But Aaron didn't seem to hear. Darkness poured from his hands. His hair and shirt were stuck to his body with sweat. The darkness swirled faster, velvety tendrils of it wrapping around the chaos-ridden pack. The wind picked up, making the trees shudder. The ground shook. The wolves tried to back up, to run, but they were fenced in by darkness, darkness that had become a solid thing, a contracting prison. Call's heart was hammering sickly. He felt a sudden pulsing terror at the idea of being trapped inside that darkness, of the nothingness closing in, erasing him, consuming him. Devouring him.
Aaron, he shouted,
But the wind was thrashing through the trees now, obliterating sound. Aaron, stop! Cole could see the glittering, panicked eyes of the chaos-ridden wolves. For a moment, they turned toward him, sparks in the darkness. Then the blackness closed around them, and they were gone. Aaron dropped to his knees as if he'd been shot. He knelt, panting, one hand over his stomach as the wind dropped away and the ground settled. The apprentices were utterly silent, staring. Alex's lips were moving, but no words were coming out. Cole looked for the wolves, but there were now only roiling masses of darkness, dissipating like smoke where they'd been.
Aaron!
Tamara broke away from Cole and ran over to Aaron, bending down to put a hand on his shoulder.
Oh my God! Aaron! Aaron!
The other apprentices had begun to whisper.
What's going on?
Rafe said, his voice plaintive. What happened? Tamara was patting Aaron's back, making soothing noises. Cole knew he should join her, but he felt frozen. He couldn't stop remembering the way Aaron had looked right before the darkness devoured the wolf, the way he'd seemed to be summoning up something, calling something. And that was what had come. He thought of the Singkane. Fire wants to burn. Water wants to flow. Air wants to rise. Earth wants to bind. But chaos. Chaos wants to devour. Cole looked back at the confusion of students. In the distance, behind them, he could see darting lights, the glowing orbs of the masters running toward them. He could hear the sound of their voices. Drew had an odd expression on his face, stoic and a little lost, as though hope had gone out of him. There were tears on his cheeks. Celia locked eyes with Cole, looking from him to Aaron, as if asking Cole, "Is he all right?" Aaron had his face buried in his hands. The pose unlocked Cole's feet. He stumbled the short distance over to his friend and dropped down on his knees beside him. "Are you okay?" he asked. Aaron lifted his face and nodded slowly, still looking stunned. Tamara met Cole's gaze over Aaron's head. Her hair had come out of its braids and was tumbling down her shoulders. He didn't think he'd ever seen her look so messy.
"You don't understand,"
she said to Cole in a hushed voice.
"Aaron's what they've been looking for. He's the..."
"I'm still here, you know,"
Aaron said in a strained voice.
"Makar."
Tamara finished in a dead whisper.
"I'm not," Aaron protested. "I can't be. I don't know anything about chaos. I don't have any affinity."
"Aaron, child."
A gentle voice cut through Aaron's speech. Cole looked up and saw, to his surprise, that it was Master Rufus. The other masters were there as well, their orbs like fireflies as they darted among the students, checking them for injuries, soothing their fright. Master North had lifted Drew from the ground and was holding him in his arms, the boy's head to his chest.
"I didn't mean to..."
Aaron started. He looked miserable.
"The wolf was there, and then it wasn't."
"You've done nothing wrong. It would have attacked you if you had not acted."
Master Rufus reached down and gently pulled Aaron to his feet. Cole and Tamara stepped back.
"You saved lives, Aaron Stewart."
Aaron drew in a ragged breath.
He seemed to be trying to pull himself together.
"They're all staring at me. All the other students,"
he said under his breath. Call turned to look, but his gaze was suddenly blocked by the appearance of two masters, Master Tanaka and a woman he'd seen once before with a group of